Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Mentor Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Do You Speak Credit when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security for us, all right, but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, all of this information about you is gained from 63 sources. This information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? And what do they want it for anyway? It's knowing how this information is gathered, and then what information is stored, and then what information do you want to keep personal and private? That's what actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Those three indices. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, just call the law school at 417-273-4967 and ask for our free general law CD package. Let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's best of all free. Just call 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website, it's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on the email machine and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. Remember, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about this thing of privacy. Privacy in credit. Do you speak credit? Credit's a foreign language to most people. It's a language spoken by judges and lawyers. It's a judge spoken by businessmen. It's a language that we use to rob, steal, pervert, and defraud you out of your wages, out of your paychecks, out of your livelihood. Now, I used to be a part and parcel with the business world when I was out there in the commercial business arena, and I didn't break any of the laws of Idaho or Nevada or California or Missouri when I did that. I violated all of the credit laws and all of the laws of God. And then one day I woke up and I said, you know, maybe this isn't as smart as I think it is. Maybe I ought to stop lying, cheating, stealing, and defrauding people, and maybe I ought to practice the law of God. Maybe I ought to practice the law of Moses. Hell, it might even be good for me. It'd sure be a lot better for the people that I'm lying to, stealing from, and ripping off. Now, when you sell something to somebody and you give him all of the information that the guy wants concerning how good this product is, there's nothing wrong with that. Now, when you don't give him all of the information that this guy needs to make an intelligent decision, that's a fraud. Now, I know any salesman listening to me says, well, you stupid nitwit, why, you'd never make a sale. You'll never make a sale if you don't tell people everything they want to hear and then shut up about what it is they're not supposed to know. And you got a good point there. You lose a lot of sales that way, but you make a lot of friends. You make a lot of friends. It's important that you give people full disclosure so that they can make the best possible informed decision so that in their individual circumstances, you know, you're selling cars. And a guy comes in and he starts kicking the tires on a 56 Corvette. Now, over in the station wagon is his wife and five kids. This guy needs a Corvette like he needs a fifth thumb on his left foot. But you know, that car salesman's going to sell this guy whatever it is he wants to buy, and when this guy expresses an interest in this Corvette, that's what he's going to sell him. He's going to sell him what he doesn't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and doesn't really want, but something that he really desires deep down inside. So we appeal to people's vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fears. In the last program, I showed you the contract from American Express. You have to waive your constitutional rights. You have to admit that you're a company doing business and commerce, and that you pay the income tax, and that you're a member of Social Security, a ward of the state, and totally incompetent, unable to manage your own business or your own financial affairs. Now, that's the legal effect of that application. That's why I said only a moron would sign it. But there's another form of information that you waive your constitutional rights to, and it's called the warranty card, product registration, as it's described here from LG Electronics. Now, I don't know who LG Electronics is. They must be a pretty good company, because we bought something here in the law school from LG Electronics in Denver, Colorado, and this is the warranty card that we never filled out and we never sent in. I didn't fill out the warranty card and send it in. So we bought a recording machine here, a DVD player, some piece of electronic equipment here in the broadcast studio that we have, and this is the LG Electronics product, what do they call this, product registration form. And it's in fine print, but it's worse than fine print. It's printed in gray on white. Not only is it in fine print, it's almost impossible to read, even if you've got glasses on. This is something, these people don't want you to know this. Whatever's on here, they don't want you to know this. That's why it's in gray. It's not in black and white and fine print. It's in fine print in gray on white. Well, not all of it, but some of it is. Now, I wanted to go over this one with you today and show you what happens when you fill out these contracts, how you waive your rights, and how these companies over here rob you, or how they appeal to your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, and then rob you. So first of all, it says up here, important, in great big bold letters, in black on white, please return and return within the next 10 days. Oh my God, this is important. There's a psychological, subliminal message here. Important. It's written twice with exclamation points, and it says, please complete and return within the next 10 days. You don't need any glasses to read that. Okay, but fortunately, boys and girls, I have my 10-power loop glasses on, and I whip the visor down so that I can read the LG Electronics. They want to know my first name, last name, middle initial, apartment number, state, zip code, city, email, date of birth, marital status, telephone number, date of purchase. You got that? Okay, it sounds reasonable enough. How many times have you given people your name, address, telephone number, email, social security number, and birth date? I mean, it's just common, isn't it? In fact, it is so common that if you said to somebody, I'm not going to give this to you, they'd look at you like, there's something wrong with this guy. This guy, this guy's out of touch with reality here. Something wrong with this guy. He must be a Muslim. He must be a terrorist. You better call the Homeland Security people up for this guy. He's not giving us his name, address, and phone number. Did you know that all of that information, your name, your address, your phone number, your telephone number, your birth date, your social security number, are all protected under the Fourth Amendment? You're protected in your person, your houses, your papers, and effects. Now, if you want to waive these rights, you certainly have a right to do that. But I'll tell you a little story here. Now, my wife broke her ankle here some years back, and I took her over to a clinic in West Plains, and this little girl came over. I say, little girl, when you get to be an old fart like me, and you're in your 60s, and there's this young girl over here. She's about 20 or 22 or 3 or 4 years old. She's just a kid, And she came over with this clipboard. She's the receptionist here in the doctor's clinic. There's probably 3 or 4 doctors practicing here, and this girl over here is just doing her job, and she brought over this clipboard. I was sitting down here reading Time magazine, reading the latest liberal poop scoop, and she brought this over, and she said, well, Mr. Gordon, would you fill this out? And I looked up, and I said, well, I'd be delighted to fill that out, young lady. And I took it, and it asked for things like your name and address and phone number and social security number and where do you work and how much money do you make and do you have insurance. And it was asking all these questions, 8.5 by 11 page, both sides, just jam-packed with information that they wanted about me. Now, this girl didn't come over and give me her social security number. I mean, this isn't a fair exchange. She doesn't come over and say, gee, Mr. Gordon, my social security number is 568-228-1119. Now, what's your social security number? No, this isn't an exchange. This is a one-sided dialogue. They want to know what my social security number is, but they're not going to tell me theirs. She wants to know what my name is, but that girl never did tell me her name. She wanted to know what my address was, but she didn't volunteer hers. Right away, I get kind of suspicious now in my old age, when people ask me for my name, address, and phone number. So I filled this thing out. Now, get your pen and paper out here and show you how to fill this out. It says, what's your first name? Well, what was his name here? Yeager, was it? Yeager, the senator from, I think his name was Yeager, senator from down around Bruno, Idaho. One time I was up in the legislature as a lobbyist in those days, and this senator, Yarborough was his name, Ralph Yarborough, Senator Yarborough. He was there in the Senate chambers, and we got chit-chatting a little bit, and we're talking about names and addresses and one thing or another. Here's what the senator told me. He said, I have never used my name twice unless it was by accident. Ralph Yarborough, I always remember the old senator from Idaho. Never used my name twice unless it was by accident. So when somebody wants to know what your name is, you know, it's Harry Finkelstein, Harry Wolf, Guy P. Daly, Joe Bologna. Now, this girl knew that my name was Mr. Gordon. I wasn't hiding it. I use the name Gordon. I mean, I'm not ashamed of my name, and I'm pretty cocky about it. I come on the air and I say, I'm your host, George Gordon. I could say, I'm your host, Ralph Yarborough. I'm your host, Joe Finkelstein. You people out there wouldn't care who in the hell is telling you the information. It's just that, you know, common sense says, well, what's your name? Well, my name is George Gordon. So typically, I just go ahead and put my name in there as George Gordon. Now, the next question is, what's your street address in your city and state and zip code? Well, now, let me ask you this, you listeners out there. What if I came up to you and I said, hey, what's your name, address, and zip code, and so on? Would you think that that was getting a little personal, or wouldn't your brain kind of tell you, what's this guy want this information for? What's he going to do with this? So I wrote in there on this form now for this girl now in the doctor's office here, I put in there Fourth Amendment objection on those lines, you know, like a street address, Fourth Amendment objection, city, Fourth Amendment objection, where it says state and zip code, Fourth Amendment objector, where it says email, I'd put Fourth Amendment objection. And it says your date of birth. And I put none, N-O-N-E. Sometimes I put down the year of my birth. I was born in 1939. I'm not ashamed of that. Sometimes I write 1939. But when they want to know the month and the day, and that gets a little personal. And besides that, it's witchcraft. Did you know that? Witchcraft. Witches. A witch's birthday is the highest holy day in an annual occult calendar. The witch's birthday. Everybody in America practices occult witches' birthdays. I mean, it's a great honor. We have parties when we have birthdays. We practice witchcraft here in this country. I don't. I used to, and I stopped. One day I woke up and I said, why do I want to practice witchcraft? And I said, I don't want to practice witchcraft. So I stopped practicing birthdays. It was a wild, wild idea. All right, so I fill out things like none. And they want to know my marital status. Marital status? Wait a minute. Hang on a second. You got a broken ankle, you come into the doctor's office, and the doctor says, are you married or single? Does that mean if I answer this question incorrectly and I say I'm married, but they don't fix broken ankles for married people. Only single people can have their broken ankles treated at this clinic. Would I be in fear of maybe having services denied to me because I'm single instead of married, or vice versa? Now, I know you're sitting there saying, my God, this guy's really stupid. Well, excuse me. Did you have sex last night? Did you have sex last night with your wife, or was it with your mistress? And wouldn't you say, well, my God, that SOB is getting kind of personal. You know, asking my birth date's kind of personal. That's personal information. And besides that, what are you going to do with it? And besides that, what in the hell's that got to do with listening to the radio? What's that got to do with getting your broken ankle fixed? I always use this as an example here in the classroom. I call it the Denny's waitress test. I don't answer questions for people that I wouldn't answer for a waitress at Denny's restaurant. Now, just go into Denny's, and the waitress comes over. She hands you the menu, and then she pulls out her 8.5 by 11 paper on her clipboard, and she starts asking, sir, what's your name? Middle initial and your last name, what's your street address and apartment number, what's your city, state, and zip code, your email, your date of birth, your social security number and your marital status and your telephone number. Would you say, wait a minute, hang on a second, this is a Denny's waitress. I don't give the Denny's waitress my telephone number, street address, social security number, and marital status to order a hamburger for lunch. Do I? Well, why in hell would you give that kind of information out to some 22-year-old twit working in a doctor's office? I used to, but I stopped. One day I woke up and I said, what the hell is this all about? So I answered all the questions on the form, both sides. Now, there's some things on a doctor's form or a doctor's information form that you might want to tell them about. Like, are you allergic to antibiotics? That's a pretty standard question. In my case, I'm not. So I answer that question. I put on there, no, I'm not allergic to penicillin or antibiotics. You know, maybe the doctor comes in and says, hey, Gordon, you know, you got pneumonia. We need to give you a shot of penicillin here. And I might say, well, okay, doc, shoot me up. And he might want to know, is this shot of penicillin going to kill you? Are you allergic to penicillin? And when I give you this shot of penicillin, you're going to croak on me right here in my office, and then your old lady's going to sue me for a wrongful death, and I'm going to have this malpractice case working against me. I mean, he would like to know that. And you'd probably like to give him the information to save your life. So there's some questions on this form I answered, you know, and some that I didn't. They ask you questions like, you know, when was the last time you went to your analyst? Do you have a psychiatrist? And what's his name and address? And who is your psychiatrist? Now, did you want to tell people that you're kind of nutso and that you're seeing a shrink? Sounded like it was kind of personal information to me. Now, I'm not going to tell you what my psychiatrist's name and address is. Well, not unless it's important. You show me why you need it. So I filled out all these questions and answers, and I took it over, and I handed it to her. I just set it on the counter, and I walked back over, picked up my Time magazine. I spent about 15, 20 minutes filling this form out. And this girl, you know, out of the corner of my eye, I could see that she was in great distress. I didn't know if it was childbirth or she couldn't read, or maybe she couldn't read my writing or what it was. But she came right over, and she said, oh, Mr. Gordon, this isn't filled out correctly. She challenged me. She said that I had some errors on this form that I just filled out. Now, I'm pretty cocky, and I said, can you point to one mistake on that paper? I kind of took her back about three paces, and she was a little bit in shock. And she said, well, here, where it says social security number, you wrote none. And we have to have your social security number, Mr. Gordon. We cannot enter this information into our computer without it. And I said, okay. And she stood there staring at me like, my God, this guy is really a space case. Now listen to the conversation again, boys and girls. She said, this isn't filled out correctly. And I said, point to one mistake. And she said, you don't have your social security number here, and we cannot enter this information into our computer without it. And I said, okay. It's okay by me if you cannot enter this into your computer. I don't give a rat's rectum whether you can or can't. There's no skin off my back. And then in total shock, she said, well, what's your address? And I said, are you going to write me a letter? And she said, no. I said, well, what do you need my address for if you're not going to write me a letter? And she stood there looking at me like I was stupid. Well, excuse me, if I said to you, give me your address, and if you said to me, why do you want my address? And I said to you, I don't know. Would you give it to me? I mean, hell, maybe I'm setting you up for a burglary. I want to know your name and address and your social security number so I can steal your identity, so I can go out and spend all of your credit on your credit cards and charge it to you. I mean, come on, guys. People have been telling us now for a long time, you better guard your social security number and your credit card numbers so that somebody doesn't steal your identity. Now, isn't that what they're telling us? And this little twit comes over here and says, what's your social security number and what's your name and address? And then when I challenged her and said, are you going to write me a letter? She says, no. No, I'm not going to write you a letter. Well, if you ain't going to write me a letter. Well, and I asked her a second question, so are you going to come and visit me? And then she smiled. she had a grin on her face and said, no. I said, okay. Well, if you're not going to write me a letter and you're not going to come visit me, you don't need my address. What else do you want to know? And I said, furthermore, I said, none of those answers on there are errors. I took the clipboard and I said, look at this. It says social security number, N-O-N-E, none. Is that spelled incorrectly? I spelled none correctly. I don't have a social security number. None. N-O-N-E. That answer is 100% true, accurate, and correct. There's nothing wrong with that answer. Besides that, this girl is not my Sunday school teacher going to grade my paper, you know, and give me a bad grade. Is she? Well, the girl didn't know quite how to respond to that, and she said, how are you going to pay for today's services? I didn't blush. I said, with gold. I'm going to pay you with gold. She was just dumbfounded. And she said, I don't think we take gold. And then she pointed to the cards on the counter and she said, we take Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and I think they took American Express. She said to me, well, we can take your check. I said, well, I don't have a checking account and I don't have any credit cards because I'm a deadbeat. And when I told her that I was a deadbeat, she was just horror stricken. She was just shocked beyond belief. And she says, well, I'm going to have to go ask Dr. Porter. And so she did. She went and she talked to the doctor. And she came back, and that's when she told me that they would take the credit cards or the check. Now, wait a minute, boys and girls, let's think about this for a second. You don't know me from Adam. You have never seen me in your life. I come tripping into your office. I won't give you my name, my address, my phone number, social security number. I'm rude and I'm obnoxious. I look like an Arab terrorist. You ask me how I'm going to pay you, and I say with gold. You tell me we don't take gold, but you do take credit cards, and I tell you I don't have any credit cards because I'm a deadbeat. And then you say to me, but we'll take your check. We'll take your check? Let me ask you, who in the hell is stupid here? Me? I'm stupid because I won't give you my social security number or my street address? Or you because you say you're going to take my check and you've never seen me in your life and I'm acting like a ditz? Well, the doctor, he couldn't contain himself. He had to come out and meet me. He'd been in there talking to my wife, and this girl had been in there two or three times trying to figure out how she's going to handle this application over here. And pretty soon, you know, the doctor, he came out and he said, well, I just got to meet you, Mr. Gordon. Now, the bill was $235, and I paid him in $100 bills. I gave him $235 in worthless Federal Reserve notes, and he's just happy as a clam at high tide. Now, I'm going to pay my bill here in cash, but, you know, most people don't deal in cash. But when they're asked all of this information, they give it. They just give it out. Let me give you another example here. Most of you fellows, at one time or another, you went in and you filled out your selective service registration form, didn't you? It's the law! I mean, they didn't tell me that at the doctor's office, but, you know, they tell you it's the law. And let me read you this selective service application form here. It says date of birth. And I put in here object First Amendment. It says sex, male or female. I said object Fourth Amendment. Social Security number, object First Amendment. Print your full legal name. I put in here Gordon George Kenneth. And it says current mailing address. I put object Fourth Amendment. It says permanent mailing address. I put object Fourth Amendment. It says current telephone number. I put object Fourth Amendment. It says I affirm the foregoing statements are true. And then it says today's date. I put object First Amendment. And it says signature of the registrant. And I put object First Amendment. So we get a First Amendment and a Fourth Amendment objection, and I put my name in here. Take two witnesses with you and file the registration. Go into the Selective Service Office and file your registration. The registration is a requirement. It says that all males 18 years old in America must register for the draft. So go register. Nothing in the law says you have to give them the information they're asking for. What are they asking for? They're asking for personal information. They're telling you, we want your Social Security number. We want you to be a ward of the state. If you're not a ward of the state, you can't register with the Selective Service System. You know that? Now, here's what caught my attention. Here's this Privacy Act statement. Listen to the Privacy Act statement. It says, the Military Selective Service Act, Selective Service Regulations, and the President's Proclamation on Registration require that you provide the indicated information, including your Social Security account number. The principal purpose of the required information is to establish your registration with the Selective Service System. This information may be furnished to the following agencies for the purposes stated. This information may be given to the Department of Defense for exchange of information concerning registration, classification, enlistment, examination, and induction of individuals and identification of prospects for recruiting. The Department of Transportation for identification of recruiting prospects for the U.S. Coast Guard. Alternative service employers for exchange of information with employers regarding a registrant who is a conscientious objector for the purpose of placement and supervision of performance of alternative service in lieu of induction into the military service. The Department of Justice for review and processing of suspected violations of the Military Selective Service Act or for perjury and for defense of a civil action arising from administrative processing under such act. Federal Bureau of Investigation for location of an individual when suspected of violation of the Military Selective Service Act. Immigration and Naturalization Service to provide information for use in determining an individual's compliance with the Immigration and Nationality Act. The Department of State for determination of an alien's eligibility for possible entry into the United States and United States citizenship. The Office of Veterans Reemployment Rights, United States Department of Labor, to assist veterans in need of information concerning reemployment rights. The Department of Health and Human Services for location of parents pursuant to the Child Support Enforcement Act, 42 U.S.C. 651. The general public, registrant's name, selective service number, date of birth, and classification, Military Selective Service Act, Section 650 U.S.C., Section 456. And your failure to provide the required information may violate the Military Selective Service Act. Conviction of such violation may result in imprisonment. May. Did you notice the word may? Doesn't say shall or will. Says may. Now, that's a far cry from you're going to go to prison here. Conviction of such violation may result in imprisonment for not more than 5 years or fine of not more than $10,000 or both imprisonment and fine. Let's go back now to the little girl in the doctor's office. What if she said, your failure to fill this form out to my specifications may result in you being prosecuted and imprisoned for 5 years and $10,000 fine? Well, wouldn't you just ask a simple question like, well, what law is it that makes these requirements of me? Now, I happened to go to Title 8 and I looked up the Selective Service Act and I took a look at this information over here. I need to register, but I don't have to give them the information that they're asking for. And that's because the information that they're asking for over here is protected under the Privacy Act. And so in the Privacy Act statement right here on the form, it says, we're going to give this information to these agencies, and we have to tell you that. And the reason that we have to tell you that we're going to give this information to these agencies is because under the Privacy Act, you don't have to give us this information if we're going to give it to these agencies. Now, come on, boys and girls, don't you think it's about time that we took a look at the law and found out what does the law actually require of us to do? And then let's comply with the law, but then let's not let somebody bamboozle us into going way beyond the law and getting information out of us that the law doesn't require. Hang on here, I've got to give you a couple of reminders. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The law school website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archive for your listening convenience. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, history, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management or staff of the network or local radio stations. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 4967. Oftentimes, agents of government will lie to you. One time I had a census lady knock on my door, and she wanted information on the census. And I'm sure the lady was sincere, and I'm sure that she meant well, and I don't ascribe to her any particular malintent, but I told her, I said, I didn't think I wanted to buy any, I didn't want to participate. And she said, it's the law. You have to participate because it's provided for in the law. And I said, well, can you tell me where that law is located? And she said, well, I don't know. And I said, well, it's in Title 13, Section 221 through Section 225A2. And I suggested, ma'am, why don't you go read the law and find out what the law provides for, and then come back and tell me what law I'm in violation of, and let's go from there. She laughed. She never came back. I'm sure she never went and looked up the law, but I'm not opposed to the census. I don't want your people out there to think that, you know, I'm some kind of a weirdo freak and that I'm opposed to 300 million Americans spilling their guts and telling the government everything about them, about themselves. If people want to do that, they certainly have a right to. But people also have a right to be protected in their person, houses, papers, and effects. And Title 13, Section 225 specifically exempts religious objectors, and that's what I am. Now, I don't know if you're a religious objector or not. And if you're not, shut up, fill out the form, and go ride the back of the bus. Those of us that are religious objectors don't fill out the form, and we don't ride the back of the bus, we drive it. I'm not riding the front of the bus, I'm going to drive the damn thing. Now, I'm not opposed to the selective service system, I'm not opposed to the military draft, I'm not opposed to the war in Iraq, I'm not opposed to the war in Afghanistan. I think the war in Iraq was a mistake, you know, I don't think it was a very good move to make, it violated the law of God, and that was enough to tell me that it probably wasn't a very good program. Now, it says how to complete this form. We're talking about the selective service form now. It says right here, the instruction says, read the Privacy Act statement. I just did. Then it says, print all entries except your signature clearly in ink. Do not sign or date the form until you're asked to do so. Complete blocks 1 through 7 and take your form to the clerk. Print your date of birth in block 1. Use a three-letter abbreviation for the month, the numerals for the day, and the year. Example, October 29, 1966. Okay. Now, I'm a religious objector, and by God, I'm not going to practice witchcraft. I'm not going to practice witchcraft for the Selective Service or the United States government or anybody else. Fortunately, here in America, we have a First Amendment that protects us from having to practice these religious ideologies of foreign and alien gods, like the United States. Now, I'm not opposed to people in America practicing birthdays. If you want to practice birthdays, have at it. But don't compel your witchcraft practices on me. Now, you know, God gives us certain instructions, and he says, follow these instructions. You follow those instructions, and you won't get in any trouble with the Selective Service system or with LNG Electronics. Now, I'm going to switch off of Selective Service. Now, let's take a look here at this LG Electronics. And I want to point out something. People complain a lot because they're getting a lot of junk mail. Now, on this is a registration. This is a product registration. It's your warranty clause. And it says, by completing and returning your product registration card, you will receive these important benefits. We will keep the model number, serial number, and date of purchase of your LG product on file to help you refer to this information in the event of an insurance claim such as theft. Product registration, returning this card is your way to guarantee that you'll be notified by LG of any issues that arise concerning this product. So if we have a product recall, we'll send you a letter. And then they've got a $100,000 giveaway sweepstakes. God, I just love it. Can't wait. It's as if I haven't got a dollar to buy a lottery ticket. God, I can get into the LG sweepstakes. Now, let me show you a little block over here. It says, to help us to understand our customers' lifestyles, please indicate the interests and activities in which you or your spouse enjoy participating on a regular basis. And it's numbered from 1 to number 51. I'm not going to read them all to you, but let me hit a few here. They want me to check these blanks. And it says, are you interested in bicycling, golf, physical fitness, recreation vehicles, cultural arts and events, gourmet cooking and fine foods, stocks, bonds, investments, science fiction, self-improvement, walking for health, money-making opportunities? I mean, there's 51 things here. There isn't anything that you can imagine that you could buy, that you could use, that in your lifestyle that you wouldn't want. All these things. And you're going to check the things that you're interested in. You know what that's for? Well, everybody that fills this out and sends this in thinks that he's doing this because if he doesn't, and this machine over here goes haywire, that they're going to have to eat it. That's not true at all. In fact, on this document itself, it says, thanks for taking the time to fill out this questionnaire. Your answers will be used for market research studies and reports. I'm talking about fine print. You couldn't read this without glasses. I raised my glasses. I've got 20/20 vision. I'm holding this within 12 inches of my eyes, and I cannot read that statement. And that's because it's in fine print, number one, and it's gray on white. They don't want me to read this. But I pull down my 10 power loops. I bring it up close to my eyeballs. And it says, thanks for taking the time to fill out this questionnaire. Your answers will be used for market research studies and reports. They will also allow you to receive important mailings and special offers from a number of fine companies whose products and services relate directly to the specific interests, hobbies, and other information indicated above. Through this selective program, you will be able to obtain more information about activities in which you are involved and less about those in which you are not. Please check here if for some reason you would prefer not to participate in this opportunity. Okay. If you don't want to receive the junk mail that is going to come from all of the companies who are going to get your name and address from the mailing list that we're compiling with your hand. Remember I said to you early in the program, I said nobody knows anything about you that you haven't told them by your own hand or uttered with your own mouth. Then check here. So if you check this down here, which you couldn't read anyway, and nobody's going to check that box. You're going to check all these boxes up here that you can read. Oh, yeah. In bold letters it says, to help understand our customers' lifestyles, please indicate the interests and activities. So you write down here, you just start marking, I'm interested in golf, and I'm interested in sailing, and I'm interested in crafts. And so you mark those three. So they sell this mailing list of 100,000 names to a golf club company, and then they'll sell it to a craft company and to a sailing boat company, and you're going to receive that kind of literature in the mail, which makes all the sense in the world for trade, commerce, business, and industry. But it doesn't have anything to do with privacy. Now, if you want to be a private person and you don't want to get these mailings, I mean, if I wanted information from some golf club company, I would go punch in golf, G-O-L-F, on a search engine on the computer. And I'm sure that some golf company is going to be listed on the internet. And then I would go to that company or some list of companies and look at their ads because I'm interested in golf, because I want to know something about the golf company, the golf clubs, but I don't want those people to know anything about me. I know it's totally one-sided. I want to know all about you, but I don't want you to know anything about me. That's what privacy is all about. And when these people ask you for this information and you give them this information, here's the selective service system. Here's what they're entitled to. Your name. And that's it. And if they want to draft you, they can send a letter to George Kenneth Gordon, General Delivery, Isabella, Missouri. And I'll get the letter and it'll say, greetings. You've been inducted into the United States Army. The selective service system does not need my Social Security number. Or do they? Yeah, they do. They need your Social Security number because people without a Social Security number can't be drafted into the military because they're not wards of the state. The 13th Amendment protects you from involuntary servitude until you volunteer. And Social Security is an adhesion contract, boys and girls, and you filled it out voluntarily. You went in and you said, please, please, let me have a Social Security number. And the government said, okay, prove to us who you are, and we'll give you a Social Security number. That's what makes you eligible for the draft. They draft Amish people without Social Security numbers. Of course, they got more and more Amish people sucked into the Social Security program. And let me tell you something here from the Bible on credit, while we're talking about this thing of credit. You know, if you lend money to any of my people that is poor by you, you shall not be to him as a usurer, neither shall you lay upon him usury. If you would all take your neighbor's raiment to pledge, that's called collateral, you shall deliver it unto him by that the sun goes down, because that's his covering only. It's his raiment for his skin, wherein shall he sleep. And it shall come to pass when he cries out to me, I'll hear because I'm gracious. Now, it's against the law. It's against the law to charge usury and interest. And every one of these cases over here with these credit cards or with these offers that are being made, these people are interested in making money off of usury and interest, collateral and lending, using unjust weights and balances. They're in a theft mode. They're in the business of stealing. And the government is in cahoots with them. They license and charter these corporations. So the corporations can go out and buy, sell, and trade in violation of the law of God. Now, if you practiced the law of God, if you practiced thou shalt not steal and the collateral statutes that come under that basic law that says thou shalt not steal, you'd have no problems whatsoever. Nobody would be sending you any mail that you didn't want. You wouldn't be dealing in Federal Reserve notes and credit cards. You wouldn't be paying usury and interest. Your house wouldn't be collateral that can be taken away from you for non-payment and so on down the line. You would be the head and not the tail. You would be the lender, not the borrower. You would be making the rules, not saying, yes, master, yes, master. I know it's a choice that you make in life. Everybody makes their choice. Now, there's a thing here called the guardian-ward relationship. And by the way, there's about, I'll tell you how many credit statutes there are. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 credit statutes in the Bible. How many usury statutes? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8 usury statutes, 7 credit and 8 usury statutes. That's 15 laws that deal with this thing of credit and usury. And I have that code plaid out in my book called The Mosaic Law. And then I have a chapter 19 in my tax school here called the guardian ward relationship. Let me share with you for a minute what happens when you fill out these applications for American Express, or you fill out the application for the selective service system, or Social Security, or driver's license, and business licenses, and marriage licenses, and so on down the line. Here's what guardian ward relationships amount to. This comes from American Jurisprudence. That's an encyclopedia, a legal encyclopedia. 39 American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, section 1, trust relations between guardian and ward. Definition of nature. A guardianship is a trust relation of the most sacred character in which one person called a guardian acts for another called the ward, whom the law regards as incapable of managing his own affairs. When you fill out the application for MasterCard, the law presumes that you're incapable of managing your own affairs. Did you know that? I didn't write that. I'm just reporting to you. That's what the law sees when you walk into court. And your guardian, the MasterCard company or the American Express company, comes in and says, my ward over here isn't performing to the terms and conditions of our agreement. He needs to be punished. He needs to be reprimanded. He needs to be corrected. And I showed you in the American Express card contract, it says with specificity that if you have a complaint against your guardian, American Express, you can't bring that to court. You can't bring that to a judge. You're specifically prohibited. It says right here, I understand that the agreement governing this account includes an arbitration provision which impacts my opportunity to have claims related to the account heard in court or resolved by a jury and to participate in a class action or similar proceeding. You could have a class action suit against American Express, where American Express has violated the law and stolen billions of dollars from their cardholders. And somebody comes along with a class action suit and says, let's sue American Express. You can't participate because you agreed beforehand that you wouldn't participate in such a class action suit. I'm just reporting the facts. So don't get mad at me now. I know some of you have these American Express cards, and I said anybody that would sign this agreement would have to be a moron. Or you'd have to be uninformed. So maybe your mental capacities aren't impaired, but you haven't been informed. Maybe you didn't have a 10-power loop to read the contract with. Maybe you went to public school and you couldn't understand the terms and conditions of the contract. Well, now I just explained it to you. Maybe you might want to send your card back and say, well, gee, I'd like to get my capacity back. Now, the purpose of statutes that relate to guardianship is to safeguard the rights and interests of minors and incompetent persons. A ward is an incompetent person. A ward is somebody who is incompetent. Now, the courts should be vigilant to see that the rights of such persons are properly protected, and the court having jurisdiction of a guardianship matter is said to be the superior guardian, while the guardian himself is deemed to be an officer of the court. So American Express will be an officer of the court, and they can haul you into court for your misbehavior. You can't haul American Express into court because you're a ward. They're the guardian. You agreed that you wouldn't complain about their guardianship, and the court is the superior guardian. Are you really sure that you want to participate in a program like that? Did you want to declare yourself to be incompetent, a ward, unable to manage your own affairs, and then waive your rights to a jury trial? You know, your founding fathers fought a revolutionary war, bled, died, suffered, and gave you these kinds of freedoms. Don't you think that to throw those freedoms away with both hands at high noon, to have some corporation come in here and buy your rights from you at your expense? Remember that the $5,000 in credit isn't money. It's credit that is being created out of nothing that you have to pay for through inflation. You're going to pay the $5,000 plus interest plus the whole $5,000 in inflation and then surrender your constitutional rights all at the same time? Are you really sure that you want to do that? You know, it's not my business to tell you not to. It's just my business to ask you the question, are you really sure that you're informed and that you know what you're doing? Now, people that have these credit cards don't have the knowledge to be free. They probably need a guardian. But some of you people out there may have enough capacity that maybe, just maybe, you might want to consider regaining your capacity and exercising your God-given freedoms under your Constitution. I know it's a wild step, but the final phase here is, in several states, this is Section 22 of Guardian Ward Relationships, in several states, statutes authorize a person who, although of sound mind, now, boys and girls, you may have a sound mind. You may not be a moron. But when you become, or when you come to the place that you believe that you are incapable of managing your own estate or of caring for your own property, you may apply for, you may request, or you may simply consent to the appointment of a conservator or a guardian of your estate or of your person or both. And this person who, when he is appointed, he then possesses over you and the estate substantially the same powers and is subject in regard thereto to substantially the same duties as a guardian of an incompetent. Underline the word incompetent. And you'll see that in Guardian Ward Relationship. Now that's on that's in Guardian Ward. It's in Volume 39, Section 1. Now let's see what page that is. It's on page 25. Page 25 of Volume 39 of Guardian Ward. That's American Jurisprudence. Now, I didn't write that. And that's just the top paragraph. And then underneath that, there is 8 citations from 8 courts that tell you that, yep, that's the way that game is played. All right. So that's what Guardian Ward Relationship is all about. And I told you about credit from the Bible. I told you about usury from the Bible. Thou shalt not steal. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Now, American Express, and I'm sure that the good people at American Express mean well, but they're in violation of the law of God. They're in violation of the law of Moses. They're stealing. They're using unjust weights and balances. They're charging usury and interest. And they're inflating the currency or inflating the monetary supply, which is an unjust weight or balance. It's against the law to do that. And when we go in here and we sign up for these credit cards, we become accessories. This is called an accessory before and after the fact. This is what puts us at loggerheads. This is what puts us in opposition to the God of Abraham. When we go out here and we participate in and we practice these kinds of criminal activities, which are legalized by our foreign and alien gods, the United States of America, Missouri, California, Washington, Oregon. Yes, they have legalized these criminal activities, but they're just as criminal. And there's a penalty that you pay. There's no such thing, boys and girls, as a broken law without a penalty. And America and our bankrupt nation and our bankrupt economy and our bankrupt institutions is that penalty. Well, I'm about out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. I'll give you a reminder here as we sign off. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you want more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, and you don't have to send me your Social Security number to get the information. Isn't that just special? Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. Remember, it's free of charge. The number to call, 417-273-4967. All right, we're about out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So thanks for listening, and good night, friends.